Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday morning here in beautiful Colorado, and you are listening to Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson, and with me is my good friend and co-host, Andre Rodatis. Hi, Andre.
Hi, Paula.
And Crystalline should be coming back here momentarily. She was with us, but she dropped off. I don't know what happened there, but I expect her to be back here soon. So
could have been that
welcome.
Neighbor across the way nailing his fence together.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, she told us she had a headache and the guy next door was putting up a fence It was causing some discomfort. But I imagine she'll be back here in a minute, and we'll welcome her on the show, Crystalline Beek Larson, when she comes whenever that is. But we are continuing on this week with a series we've been doing on life after death. And we're actually reading paper 47 from the Urantia book on the mansion worlds, the seven mansion worlds. And, you know, we're talking about, oh, here's Crystalline now. Hi, Crystalline.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. You're on with us. Great to have you, as always.
My neighbor has started some type of ambitious construction project right across the street. And right when the music started, he started running some type of a jackhammer.
I was just waiting for the word jackhammer to come. That was like the icing on the cake, and it happened.
I just thought it might be best for me to just hang up during the intro
during
the song because I didn't really want. So as soon as it starts up again, I might have to let you go.
Okay. Well, we're glad to have you. Minus the jackhammer.
Yeah.
I might be popping in and out during the show
today,
folks.
All right.
Sorry about
I'll
that.
Keep an eye on it. I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
So I was just telling everybody that we are in the middle of our series, or maybe coming to the end. We might be able to finish it in one more show on the seven mansion worlds. And we kind of kicked it off with Danion Brinkley, as I said last week, and Danion devotes his life to helping people die with dignity, because he is unafraid, having been through it a few times now. He knows it's nothing to fear. And as Urantia Book readers, we know that there's nothing to fear. And we've pretty much discussed at length why there's really nothing to fear, and philosophized about, you know, life and death being opposite sides of the same coin, birth and death, say. And death is really just another birth, a birth into a bigger life. And it's something that the Urantia Book covers in such beautiful, glorious detail throughout the whole book. We feel it's important to share from time to time because people, you know, experience loss. And on this world, it can be frightening, terrifying, send you into just the worst kind of grief. And the sense that, you know, the person you love has gone into the unknown, and now, you know, you may never see them again. Or if you're facing death, not knowing what might be coming down the road, you know, the great unknown, the greatest question of all questions. Someone once told me, a professor once told me that the religious drive is really based on that one question. What happens after you die?
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense to me, you know. What happens after you die? So we just, and Andre asked me to share a little bit with you guys about the memorial service that we just had last weekend for a friend who's been in our community for 40 plus years, someone we dearly loved. And Andre spoke to, did a, what would you call it, an epitaph? No.
No, a eulogy.
Eulogy.
I lost the word. Thanks, Andre. And actually, several people. I can't relate. The word just left. I don't know where it went, but thanks for giving it back. He was eulogized by several people, actually.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever seen a person so thoroughly eulogized. I mean, it was just, and every single person that got up to speak about him had something so beautiful to say about him. His name is Stan Hartman. Sweetest soul. And longtime student of the Urantia Book. We knew him well. We all studied with him at one time or another. He was one of the very first people that I ever studied the Urantia Book with. Gracious. He had this musical voice that I imagine in my mind was a lot like Jesus' voice. He wasn't very old, only in his like 72 years old.
Yeah.
But we celebrated his life. And yes, there were some tears, but they were tears of, they were sweet tears. They were tears of joy commingled with sadness. Because when a person like Stan leaves your life, you can't help but be sad about that. And you know you won't see him again, not in this world. That's sad. But
you're going to miss him.
Yeah, you're going to miss him. But there was such a sweetness in that fond farewell. We bid him a fond farewell with absolute faith. And, you know, it was just really a great occasion. We celebrated his life. We had a great meal afterwards. We loved coming together as a community, friends of Stan's that none of us knew, and many of us that all knew each other. So it was a great memorial for Stan. Did you want to chime in on that? You guys, you were both.
Well, it was really a wonderful celebration, and again, it's made possible by having the teachings of the Urantia Book, you know, in no uncertain terms, let us know that this is our first life and definitely not our last life, that it's the beginning, as Paula so eloquently put in titling the show, it's the reality of endless life. What a difference in looking at life going forward when you understand that life is endless. if you want it to be. And why wouldn't you want it to be? I mean, some people can come to that conclusion, and God bless them, but by and large, most people that I know like life, and why not learn to live it in such a way that you happen to be in harmony and in a truthful relationship, meaning in a life that works with other people as a result of understanding your true relationship to those people through God, that we're all brothers and sisters. And if we understand that, my goodness, then all of a sudden, number one, in fellowship we have these wonderful experiences, but number two, when we lose a fellow, we know we are only losing them to our next stage. We know we're saying a temporary goodbye. We're literally watching them graduate to their next level, a level that we aspire to, and that we are then inspired to do our best to live the remainder of our own lives in such a way, graduate in such a dynamic manner. And in this case, especially, we had the wonderful, it's easy to eulogize somebody who lived well. And nobody lives perfectly on this planet, but, when you live your life, with the philosophy of the Urantia book and with a desire to know God, and I know that of my dear friend Stan.
I'm dedicated to serving others. That was one of the things that really stood out.
Exactly. And so when that's there, then goodness gracious, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful occasion of celebration. The graduation is a true graduation. The course of the first initial material life has been passed, and we can anticipate a glorious resurrection into the soul life, the Urantia life that is talked about in the Urantia book and that we've been reading about and studying the last couple of weeks here on The Cosmic Citizen.
And even though we are reading just this one paper, we want all of our listeners to know, if they haven't read the Urantia book, there is so much more material about life after death and the journey towards paradise and beyond that we are not covering during this show. We're just really scratching the surface with this one paper.
Mm-hmm.
There's such a phenomenal amount of information, and the information in the Urantia book really rings true when you read it in its entirety. It just makes so much sense. And there isn't any other document anywhere else in the world that covers life after death with the eloquence and to the extent that this book does. It's one of the things that makes this material so compellingly believable. Many people feel when they read it, like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. This is what I want to believe about the universe.
It just makes sense. And certainly, many religions have faith in the afterlife, truly believe in the afterlife, particularly Christians. They have a deep and abiding faith. Their faith is just so touching to me. I mean, when you see, for instance, when that man went in and shot those Amish children, the response of that Amish community was incredible, so faithful, so beautiful. You know, they responded with love and peace and forgiveness, assurance. So, reading the Urantia book isn't the only way to have a wonderful faith in life after death. But for Christians or for anybody who reads the Urantia book, I think that they would be amazed and impressed with how it correlates with other religious teachings on these matters, how it illuminates what actually happened. Yeah, some of the it demystifies some of it too. You know, it's not. Gee, we die, we go to heaven. There's pearly gates. We go into this city of gold, and we play the harp on a cloud. You know, it specifically talks about what happens, and that there is purpose, and there is progression, education, evolution to perfection, and endless service in the worlds on high. Meaningful service. So meaningful in the sense of like a job is meaningful, you know, a job that you really love, a job that makes you feel really good about what you're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, we can be, there's so many things we could get into, and we should start reading just to prime the pump here.
Yeah.
Really, really quickly. But part of what, you know, our mentioning this is about is there's a real connection with the teachings of the Urantia book with life as we live it here on this planet. You know, the fact that we're all going to leave this planet and the fact that it comes to practically everyone in the form of having to lay down your body in death means that for those without a faith, or for those without a clear view, even with a faith, there's been so much vagueness around it, and so much view as well of a God that was more interested in counting up the things we did wrong than in looking at the things we do right, or a God that has only so many places near Him, you know, for us. I'm saying that, you know, that there are certain religions that throw out numbers like 144,000, which is ludicrous. Yeah, you know, I mean, what hope is there for 7 billion people on this planet when, you know, 144,000 seats are available? How hard is it to get one of those seats?
It's like
winning
the lottery.
Urantia book, right. The Urantia book says there is ample room for all who will come. Anybody who truly wants to progress will find themselves alive in the next life. And that's joyful, that's hopeful. That's something that if one holds that truth in one's heart, all of a sudden the rest of life becomes something that, okay, I don't have to cram every last thing that I ever wanted to get into this life. I can understand that if I just live my life well, there will be ample opportunity to continue living and perhaps aspire to some of those other things that are true desires on my part.
Right.
And I'm never going to be without all those friends who also, you know, like me, would like to go forward, which, you know, I happen to believe are the majority of all people. I think the majority of all people are sane and happy or aspiring to happiness and do want to move forward. So,
well, throughout history, people have been searching for the answer of immortality.
Mm-hmm.
Been seeking that fountain of youth or some way to cheat death. And one of the blessings of having this assuredness is, and so many details about what happens next, is that we can really let go of that futile search and can focus on really a vital search and a affirming search for that relationship with God, and an attempt to find a place in the world where we can really be of service to our fellows. And that brings true happiness. It's the ability to let go of or to transcend the need to just maintain the self.
There's mm-hmm. so much fear around our own mortality, and you know, it is liberating, Krislyn, to be able to let that go and realize that, you know, there's a place in the Urantia book that says very important is the work of the sphere that you're actually living. You know, but very important is the work of the next sphere, but nothing equals the work of the importance of the work in of the sphere in which you are actually living. But it actually gives you a sense of the next sphere, and that, you know, your life's purpose goes on, and you don't just go around once. You don't just get one life, go for the gusto. You know, as Andre said, you do get an opportunity to pursue those passions that you didn't have an opportunity. So it takes away a lot of, you know, fear and regret and angst about this life, and allows you to really live more fully,
mm-hmm.
more joyfully. Yeah. And we have a caller. Shall we put a caller on real quick? And
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, let's see. Hi, caller. You're with us on The Cosmic Citizen.
Oh, this is Scotty in Texas.
Hi,
Scotty.
Scotty. Oh, my gosh.
Can I relate quickly a personal experience with Paper 47?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Well, some years ago, I was on the waiting list for a heart transplant, and I had about a week of life left. And I got to thinking one day, well, what can happen to me? Well, I can get a heart and get it transplanted and live a few more years. That would be a win. And I thought, well, what if I don't? Well, then what Jesus said about mansions in his Father's house came to mind. So I got out Paper 47 and reread it because I was a prospective tenant in one of those mansions in the very near future.
Prospective tenant, yeah.
And so this great sense of peace came over because I was in a win-win situation. If I get transplanted and live, and incidentally have lived for 21 years, that's a win. But if I don't get transplanted, I go to the mansion, and that's the win. I'm in a win-win situation. I can't lose. And this great sense of peace came over, even though I had known these things. I had studied the Urantia book for over a decade at that time. It just, it's different when it gets up close and personal. And
sure is.
Heaven brought me that peace that is beyond human understanding. And it's still with me.
Man.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Scotty. And we're glad you're still here with us.
Oh, boy.
I like it quite a bit myself.
Well, you know, I invite you to stay on with us, Dr. Scotty, if you have some time. Dr. Scotty, to remind our guests, has actually been a guest on The Cosmic Citizen. And I think you've, because you taught at the university level for many, many years, you actually turned a lot of people on to the Urantia book. You turned Ann Garner on to the Urantia book, if I recall, and she is one of the hosts of Symmetry of Soul. So my hat's off to you. And
well,
like Chris Lawrence said.
It's my privilege.
Yeah.
It's my privilege. And,
yeah.
You know, once you find out about the truth, I had to learn this early on to quit telling everybody about it. Because they're not ready to think deeply about these things.
Well, that's true. And, you know, there's lots of reasons why people might not want to pick up that book. It's daunting, but it sure is worth it,
For those of us who are really interested in this information, it really gives us just about everything we could ever need or want or have or dreamed for.
Yes.
Oh,
so
absolutely. It has so integrated as a scientist and as a believer and a truth seeker. It has answered so many questions and integrated so many concepts. that it's, you know, I still have to constrain myself from trying to tell everybody about it, but you have to wait and see, find out whether they're seeking, and let that be the determinant of whether I speak to them.
How did you come across the book yourself?
Well, I have been looking for truth for several years and going into all the wrong places because of two metaphysics and all that sort of thing. I actually studied to be a numerologist with Pythagorean numerology for 5 years, and I read charts for people, and basically I gave all that up when I found the book, and I was guided to it through a series of people because I was interested in healing, and was guided to Mary Dawes in Dallas, who I studied with for 5 years. And that's my story.
Well, that's wonderful.
And since that time, and since my receiving a transplant, I was talking with God one day, and I said, you know, you gave me some more time, and it's really your time, so I'll go anywhere and do anything you want me to do.
Mm.
And that's when things started to happen. And I've been able to participate in research projects in the heart transplant or in the organ transplant community nationally that is has benefited hundreds, if not thousands, of people terminally ill waiting on waiting lists waiting for a transplant. And it was just being willing to serve and being enabled. It's really been amazing.
Well, do you want to hang on the show here with us today, or do you have to run?
Maybe read a little bit since I can't today.
Read from that wonderful paper. You're welcome to. We'd love to have you.
Okay, I'm beginning to get a house full of people because it's Mother's Day, and
you can just listen in. That's fine. You know, either way.
And bug out whenever you need to.
Sure. Right. So why don't we get on with our reading, and we'll read about some of what is giving Scotty and so many others, all of us, so much hope about the next life. And Paula, do you want to begin reading, or shall I?
Was it Section 7, the Fifth Mansion World?
Correct, yeah.
That's it.
It was Section 7. Okay, I'll read it.
Go ahead.
This is Paper 47, The Seven Mansion Worlds, Section 7, The Fifth Mansion World. Transport to the Fifth Mansion World represents a tremendous forward step in the life of a Marantia progressor. The experience on this world is a real foretaste of Jerusalem life. Here you begin to realize the high destiny of the loyal evolutionary worlds, since they may normally progress to this stage during their natural planetary development. The culture of this mansion world corresponds in general to that of the early era of light and life on the planets of normal evolutionary progress. And from this you can understand why it is so arranged that the highly cultured and progressive types of beings who sometimes inhabit these advanced evolutionary worlds are exempt from passing through one or more, or even all, of the mansion spheres. Having mastered the local universe language before leaving the fourth mansion world, you now devote more time to the perfection of the tongue of Uversa, to the end that you may be proficient in both languages before arriving on Jerusalem with residential status. All ascending mortals are bilingual from the system headquarters up to Havona. And then it is only necessary to enlarge the super universe vocabulary. Still, additional enlargement being required for residence on Paradise. Upon arrival on Mansonia No. 5, the pilgrim is given permission to visit the transition world of the corresponding number, the sun's headquarters. Here the ascendant mortal becomes personally familiar with the various groups of divine sonship. He has heard of these superb beings and has already met them on Jerusalem, but now he comes really to know them. On the fifth mansion world, you begin to learn of the constellation study worlds. Here you meet the first of the instructors who begin to prepare you for the subsequent constellation sojourn. Most of this preparation continues on world 6 and 7, while the finishing touches are supplied in the sector of the ascending mortals on Jerusalem. A real birth of cosmic consciousness takes place on Mansonia No. 5. You are becoming universe-minded. This is indeed a time of expanding horizons. It is beginning to dawn upon the enlarging minds of the ascending mortals that some stupendous and magnificent, some supernal and divine destiny awaits all who complete the progressive paradise ascension, which has been so laboriously, but so joyfully and auspiciously begun. At about this point, the average mortal ascender begins to manifest bona fide experiential enthusiasm for the Havona ascent. Study is becoming voluntary, unselfish service natural, and worship spontaneous. A real Marantia character is budding. A real Marantia creature is evolving. So several things about that reading struck out to me. And the first one was about language and how we need to master those languages of the universe. And, I think that when Pentecostals mention speaking in tongues, that's what they're actually doing. They're speaking the universe language. And they maybe don't know it, but it's they call it the heavenly language, so actually maybe they do know it. But and then the fact that you have to master two of these languages. And here's a question that came to me. You know, the Arantia book teaches that we will have one language eventually on this world. So what do you think is the meaning of having more than one language in the universe, from the system to the local universe? Or is it the same language, it's just upgraded with more concepts? I kind of got that from the reading, but... Anyone?
Well, the book does say that you mortals must have your symbols. Do you recall that?
Yeah, yes.
And the language is a symbolic representation of thoughts. And as we are expanding, going from one Marantia embodiment to the next, and we're going to have, hundreds of upgrades.
570.
Yeah.
And it seems reasonable to me that as we become enlarged and more capable, you need a new form of expression with which to perceive and communicate what it is that you're grasping. And in language translation, something's always lost in translation. And if the capacity of the language for that expression is limited, a higher level language is needed.
Yeah,
I come from the computing background, and that's the history of software development. It's gone on from the almost... straightforward replication of digital expression, zeros and ones, it literally how it's done in the machine, in the hardware, to macro languages. And finally, my concept is, as we progress from Hovona on, that language as such will no longer be needed, and because things will be automatically transmitted from mind to mind.
But even if things are transmitted from mind to mind, we still need symbolism with which, I mean, we use language in order to think.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
Even when we're talking about mathematical thinking, we still have the language of mathematics. And we know that that's one of the universal languages, but we have to be able to have some conceptual framework in order to think about higher levels of philosophy. And one of the ideas that has intrigued me over the years is, having been a traveler, someone who's enjoyed traveling in different parts of the world, I have been in a situation where communication has not always been easy between people speaking different languages.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine, you know, I've been in some places where there have been many people from different nationalities converging in certain places as tourists or as merchants or business people. And usually they end up finding some kind of common language that they can utilize in order to communicate. And I've often wondered about, well, we think about what it's like for all of the people of this world to be resurrected together in one place, but when we've got people from several different worlds coming together, the language barrier could be really profound. And it seems like a common language would be absolutely imperative for us to be able to travel to different parts of that sphere. And what we're told from previous readings is that travel becomes more and more a part of our Marantra experience. Traveling to different spheres within our levels of achievement and being able to understand what we're observing when we visit these other spheres would be essential.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this is a really important bit of information that we're gleaning here, because the ability to understand and learn and be receptive to learning other languages is a really important part of our universe journey.
I agree.
It's essential. Yeah.
I've had the experience, as some of you know, and that I've shared on previous episodes of The Cosmic Citizen. I was living in Quebec for a year and a half, and one of the great joys that I had was to be able to study with other readers of the Urantia book, but it wasn't exactly the Urantia book. It was Le Livre de Rancia in French. And that's a different book conceptually, but it is a different book in translation. And the fact that it is in French means that people that don't have access to English but do have access to French can study it in that language. And, of course, it's in about 19, I think, if I'm not mistaken. It was 14, but I think it's getting closer to 19 languages. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but it's getting close. We're at least at 15, I believe.
Yeah.
And so Why is that important? There's a number of, you know, I've heard it argued among your answer book readers, and I'm not going to belabor this because we want to talk about other things, but an Anglophone readership, you know, English speakers are notorious for being unilingual in the world. And the reason for that is that we can afford to do so. The lingua franca of the world has started to become English, and it looks like, though it's not a foregone conclusion by any means, but it does look like English may evolve to be the universal language of this planet. Even so, there is such a value to getting to the point of being able to take on another language. It's almost as though you get to experience your own personality in another way, but more than that, it opens you up to a different culture, different ways of thinking, because the way a language is structured has a lot to do with the people that speak it, but more so it structures thought differently. It's not better or worse. There are some things easier to express and harder to express in various languages. For instance, in French, they didn't have the word for mind. They used l'esprit. They used les pensées. You know, l'esprit is obviously the word for spirit, but it was also used interchangeably for mind. Mm. You also have the word pensée, which is thought. Well, that doesn't exactly capture the word for mind. So what's been really interesting and innovative with the translations of the Urantia book is in the latest translation, not the latest, but the translation before, the French translators of the Urantia book decided to take the adjectival word mental, literally mental, okay, and use it as a noun and make it mind, okay? So So the Urantia book is potentially making inroads into culture. As the Urantia book spreads in and through Francophone culture, it's now carrying with it, as a result of the translation of that concept, a new word that carries new meaning, a discrete, you know, morpheme that actually means mind, mental. And
I'll be done.
And yes. So this is what's wonderful about that. And you know, the Urantia book says to us very, very clearly that it's very important if we're going to spread human brotherhood on this world, and Crystalline's point is, you know, so well taken, that if we're going to have comprehension, one of the ways to spread spiritual brotherhood, aside from, you know, the fatherhood of the realization of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, the very first thing they mention is that we need the multiplication of multilinguists. That means all of us that speak one language ought to at least get better and try to speak a little bit more of some other languages, but if we can become closer to fluent in at least one language, all of a sudden we become able to function perhaps in another culture a little better than we were able to, and be ambassadors of the culture we come from and of the Urantia book to another culture.
We have another caller.
I'd like to take this opportunity to just plug some of those options that we now have on the internet, where we don't actually have to physically travel the world to interact with people from different countries and different cultures through the genius of the internet. There are not only translation applications available to us on the web, like Google Translate and other translation formats, but there are also language lessons on YouTube given by native speakers. There are also clubs of multilinguists that meet on the internet to edify and encourage each other and help each other learn new languages. And this is a phenomenon that is that is spreading.
That's
and
amazing.
Once you learn another language fluently, a second language fluently, it becomes easier for you to learn a third and a fourth and so on. And for those people who have that innate interest and talent, it is remarkable to experience the enthusiasm they have for sharing that learning with others. And I really encourage anyone who's listening, who's interested in studying a new language, to take advantage of these new forms of learning language that are available to us now, that even 10 or 15 years ago would have been unimaginable.
Yeah.
Well, and what a great segue, because speaking of the remarkable and wonderful Internet, it's that exactly that makes this show possible and allows us to reach all over the world at once, unlike other forms of radio ever were able to do. And right now we have our friend Sean from England listening in. We have Gary Tong from England on the board with us. So really remarkable. And we have another caller, and I'd like to put this caller on as well. So hold on with me here, guys. Caller 636, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen.
Oh, well, hello. My name is Ann Graber, and I am a dementia reader as well as a distance learning instructor.
Oh, great.
And I'm
wonderful.
Addressing your question of a universal language and local languages. So to summarize briefly what I have learned in my 20 years as a distance learning professor is this. Initially, we thought we were just starting a distance learning program locally, meaning in the United States. And to our amazement, we kept getting calls from around the world, because most students who have graduated from a master degree program in wherever have had some acquaintance with English. And our outreach is in the English language. So after 20 years of it, I personally went to the first grade in three different countries. Mm. And I learned from that experience, where I felt so baffled, I must be the dunce of the universe. I don't understand what the teacher wants, what the children are saying. What I learned is to listen for what they mean. And this has been so invaluable when I now have calls in very accented English that is difficult to understand. I can attune to what do they really need to know, what are they asking. And by that criteria, I can well identify why we would want to have one universal language, and then everybody in their own cultural setting can speak whatever they want in their kitchen while they're cooking. It's very similar to the familiarity with local food, a local language. It gives
an
identity.
That's such a great analogy.
Yes, it gives such a local identity. Now, taking this to the universal realm, I can well imagine we will all have to have a common way of communicating, and then still people coming from Earth or there or elsewhere will want to cluster together to talk about their experiences in their own cultural idiom, be it English maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that has been my experience, and I have often wished for the time that the time will come sometime, somewhere in the distant future, when we can just telepathically get a direct perception of what are people trying to communicate to us. We will have a more essential idea of their communication than even putting it in any linear language.
My daughter
it'll
May.
It'll help us be better listeners.
My daughter May went to Guatemala last
summer.
And she has taken, at that time she had taken 3 years of Spanish. And she met a family there. She went with a group of Urantia book readers. They did an outreach mission there through a book fair. And May was one of the young, she had gotten a scholarship from the Fellowships International Committee to go there. And she met this family, and it was three generations of Urantia book readers, the father, the grandfather, and the son. And actually the whole family was reading El Libro de Urantia. And shout out to Augustine Arellano, who's on the board with us. Another, you know, great thing about the Internet allows Augustine to join us live on this show. But anyway, May Lee met the young man and his family. He's about 17 years old, and she told me, Mom, we could barely speak each other's language, and yet we understood each other completely. They got to be very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of call that speaking heart.
Yes.
It's a heart connection when you say what they're meaning, what they're speaking, mm-hmm. what they, you know, you're listening to their meaning or what they're trying to communicate. You listen with your heart. And I've had other people express that as well, that they were able to go to a country where they didn't speak the language at all, and yet they were able to communicate with their heart. I find that very interesting.
Indeed. So that comes closer to this direct perception, from the heart.
From the heart,
well,
yeah.
I just was intrigued by your question and your conversation, and I wanted to put this out because we are globalizing at such a rapid rate.
True.
That it is.
I'd like to ask you a question about that, if you don't mind. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about what distance learning is subject now?
My subject is Viktor Frankl's logotherapy, and we have had board members of the Urantia Foundation frequently come to our congresses wondering, could Viktor Frankl have read the Urantia book? If he did, maybe he got it through the ethers because some of his theories were published in the 40s, in the late 40s, and the Urantia book wasn't officially out until 1955. So, also he lived in Vienna, and the Urantia book was issued here in Chicago. But the meaning-centered living, purpose in life, these are the themes of Viktor Frankl's psychotherapy, and this is what I'm a professor of. And so there is a commonality, idealistically speaking. And that's why I can be so passionate about teaching logotherapy when the entire Urantia book is a little too much, as many of your subjects have alluded. I would want to proselytize about the Urantia book, and I have done so, and I have given away copies right and left, and when I visit my friends, they don't seem to have been read. Okay, so since Viktor Frankl addresses a part of meaningful living, I thought this is a good avenue to, people are receptive to this now. The globalization. You know, you mentioned several things would not have been possible 10, 15 years ago. Well, certainly 20 years ago when we started this distance learning, we offer our coursework either in a group format here in the United States or by telephone tutorials anywhere in the world. The curriculum is the same. The required readings are the same. The writing is the same. That's required. But we converse with the students individually in tutorials. So that's basically the way we do it at the Viktor Frankl Institute. And it is attracting thoughtful people. Clinicians, yes, but primarily those who are, well, shall we say, spiritually oriented.
Hmm. Yeah, people who are really interested in transcending.
Right, transcending just the psychophysical, and who
right.
are ready to include the spiritual dimension in their therapeutic approach with others.
And Viktor Frankl is such a vivid example
mm-hmm.
of someone who's able to overcome whatever type of circumstances life throws at him
yes.
and to transcend those in such a gracious way. And
indeed.
It's so inspiring. I mean, what an excellent tool or format to utilize to reach people of different cultures.
Yes, and you know, several things that I first learned about in the Urantia book and am now experiencing, for instance, that our concept of time and place will have to change.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get calls in a given day that originate in 12 different time zones, it becomes obvious that we're not all in the same chronological timeline. And then I get a call from the high north in Scandinavia, oh, it's cold here. And then I get a call the same day, oh, we're sweltering on the beach and in Sao Paulo or Rio. And it's just, initially it was disconcerting to the point where I was confused, and where on the planet am I? But now it has just become commonplace. And
sort of imagine what it must be like to be in this progression through the universe and wondering, where in the universe am I?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And, you know, another point that was made earlier in your show today about there has to be a certain readiness before people can want to read the Urantia book. Well, in my case, it was first presented to me in 1985. And I opened it up and I heard, not yet. Oh, well,
huh.
That's strange. because I don't often hear inner dialogue that loudly and clearly. And subsequently for years, I would go to the bookstore, the Urantia book. I'd open it up, not yet. And then I'm in Spain on a working vacation, and our hostess has a Urantia book on my night table. In the morning, I wake up, and I can't wait till she comes. There's a Urantia book on my table. I put it there for you. This is how I had to wait to be ready to read the Urantia book.
That is the most amazing story. I've never heard anything quite like that version.
And yes,
that's wonderful.
I now see that I had to process other theories, become thoroughly acquainted with Viktor Frankl's logotherapy, for instance, which was a good preparation in my case for reading the Urantia book. Well, I don't want to take up.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for calling, and I loved your comments. You're in Chicago right now? You're in the Chicago
area?
Yes.
Oh, in
Missouri.
St. Louis, Missouri, yes.
Great.
And caller, what is your name again? Just
My
your
name
first name
is Ann Graber.
Anne Graver.
And you, yes, okay. You mentioned your, you might know some good UBs from my friends, the Ropers.
Oh,
yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Long time.
They used to live here in our community, actually.
Yeah, we know them very well.
Yes. So it was a joy to meet with them for lunch a couple of weeks ago. They're now living in Texas, but they were up here for a visit, so we met. We had a Urantia group meeting here for several years, but our group disbanded. Moved away, retired, went south, what have we.
Now, I've posted the logotherapyinstitute.org, is that correct?
That is one place where I teach, and the other one is Graduate Theological Foundation. But the Viktor Frankl Institute would be the primary
okay.
one. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well,
you
feel free to stay on the line with us if you wish to while we continue reading, or you can hang up as you will, if that's what you prefer.
I will stay on the I will listen to you on the Internet because
computer.
I'm expecting my doorbell to ring soon.
Okay,
very good.
Thank you so much for calling. It was great having you on the show.
Great, great sharing, Anne. Thank you so much.
well, aren't we lucky to have two such esteemed callers come on with us today? What a treat.
And
Dr.
maybe
Lawrence
this would
Scotty
be a good
now
time
Anne Graber.
For some station identification.
Yes,
it's a great
you're
one.
Listening. You're listening to Cosmic Citizen on Blog Talk Radio today, and we're talking about life after death from paper 47 in the Urantia book on the Urantia worlds. And we invite you to call in if you'd like to share personal comments or experiences, and our call-in number is 646-716-8158. Okay, let's read on.
Okay, who wants to take a...
May I make a comment first? This is Scotty. Before I have to go, I would just like to pose it for you something for you to think about, and that is, how does language change as we progress in Urantia mind?
Oh.
We just read in the Fifth Mansion World, there's a tremendous leap forward in the life of Urantia progression. And since we will be at different embodiment, we're moving from the physical to the interim towards spiritual. And finally, after the seventh world, we lose the mark of the beast. And we lose the time-space finite orientation we've been in for so long. And I think that has a great impact on the symbolic nature of language as we know it. And so we can't really know how Urantia mind is going to be because we haven't been there yet. But it's interesting to contemplate.
Yes.
It
well,
sure
that's
is.
Why we're given that. Yeah, to be able to contemplate. Before the Urantia book, we didn't have any basis to contemplate very much about, at least no direction to our contemplation about the next life, and now we do, and that's an excellent point that you make, Scotty.
Well, it's spiritual sci-fi.
I love
except
that.
Except that it's not fi, it's non-fi. And,
right.
And, yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed listening to you, and I'll listen again soon.
Thank you for your contributions. It was really great having you on, Scotty.
Wonderful, Scotty. Thank you.
And you're welcome anytime.
Yeah.
Happy Mother's
and
Day.
And happy
to all
Mother's
your mothers.
Day.
Yes, happy Mother's
happy
Day.
Happy Mother's Day to your wonderful wife.
Thank you.
And God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
Well, that was an excellent question that Scotty posed. I'd like to respond briefly.
Why don't you repeat the question, too, as you understand it?
what he asked us, why do you think, or what do you think we will need expanded language or universe language for as we progress, especially once we begin to leave the finite mindset behind, as we are reaching this sort of apex of progression through Marantia towards a spiritual, towards becoming more spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how
that
you heard
good.
The question?
Yeah, I think that's a good recap.
Well, and it seems that if we utilize just the new language that we have been presented in these papers, there are certain concepts that there were no words to describe in the English language that the Urantia book presents to us and defines for us to the best of it, of their ability. Those few words that have been added to the English language and now translated into others have expanded our thinking ability. It's like even a word as simple as absinthe.
Right.
It just creates this whole new playing field for us to ponder with and also to communicate with other people who have read this book. It has translated our cultural toolkit in a way that has really been mind and experientially expanding. I imagine that when we get new senses, if we're told we're going to have 70 as opposed to the 5, 6, or 7 that we recognized here, I think there are many senses that we have here that we don't call senses in our current cultural concepts, but that, like, for example, a sense of humor, which I think is a really valid sense.
And we actually call it a sense.
Yeah, we even call it a sense of humor. Good point.
Yeah.
But as we develop more senses, we're going to need a whole lot bigger language to communicate the expanded awareness that we have to those new senses. And as we become more spiritual, less material, we're going to be also become a lot more mobile. Imagine what kind of a language beings who can all fly, for example, and get from place to place by traversing energy circuits, what kind of new language we're going to have to utilize. Imagine how having the internet has completely expanded our language in the past 20 years.
LOL.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. Language is evolving.
We've gotten to the point where we've needed to condense language into acronyms for the process of texting.
There's so many.
Go ahead.
Well, something you said struck me that, and Scotty said it too. He mentioned the mark of the beast, which I have some decided opinions about what that means. I guess we probably all do. It would have been great to, I would have liked to have asked him what that means to him, but what it means to me is the mark of the beast is animal fear, and it's a legacy that we all have to overcome. And essentially, the Urantia book is saying that we won't overcome it right away. We'll have it for a while, but we'll finally overcome it. And so how, you know, to your point, Chrislyn, how will not having animal fear change our language? And how do we speak fear to each other? Because of necessity, we speak fear to each other. You know, we speak fear to our children. We say, that's dangerous. Don't do that. You know, don't run in the street. You know, but when we're in a place now where animal fear becomes less and less and less necessary or feasible, fear will be out of our language completely. And we won't use things, perhaps we won't use things like coercion, coercive words, coercive tactics. They won't be necessary anymore. And that's
well,
a struggle.
And what's the opposite of fear? Or what replaces
faith.
Fear in a culture where that animal tendency isn't a reality? I believe it's replaced by love and faith.
Right.
And if you grow up in a family where love and faith are the foundational root of your family communication style, if you can imagine that, where self-esteem or self-respect is something that is rooted in your psyche from the earliest childhood onward, what happens when you come across or interact with somebody who is fear-filled, fearful, and is without faith,
mm-hmm.
and has a much more belligerent family culture? I can imagine some of those kinds of experiences, and I think of the one, the more belligerent, fear-filled, faithless individual as having that mark of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a level of ignorance of the universe reality of being part of being really immersed in the idea of the loving fatherhood of God and the service brotherhood of man.
Mm.
And where Scotty is deriving this, as well as of course, is from the Seventh Mansion World paper, where it talks about that. And I won't go ahead and divulge too much about that, but you know, it's really the last step that qualifies us then for Gerasim citizenship. What was valuable as scaffolding in the material life is no longer valuable to carry along with us any more than, you know, once you've built a building, you don't leave the scaffolding up once the architecture is firmly in place. And all that material life did to help to create the support for a wonderful growth of that budding Urantia being, which after all underscores the value of this animal spirit existence that we're living. You know, this, we wouldn't be placed in an animal form with the capacity for spiritual growth were it not that this Urantia soul that grows up carries forward certain values that can come out of not purely animal life, but animal life touched by spirit that we call human. And when we do that, once those values have been created by the material life, now we no longer have the need to carry forward that which was the animal part that caused that to grow in the first place. And there's a time for the inception of that, But once it's there, once it's actually been captured as a value by the thought adjuster and by the soul that the thought adjuster has woven for us, then it's time to let it go. And in the seventh mansion world, we do that. But I digress and I shoot ahead, and let's move forward with the sixth.
Before we do, Paula, I would really like to hear your opinion on this also.
On what specifically? On animal
fear?
Well,
on Scotty's question.
Well, that's what I said was kind of what struck me about that. And that, you know, that losing the vestiges of animal fear would really propel language forward. That's what really struck me about that. And
I guess you did answer that.
Just one step beyond that is that what you said, Krislyn, when we're communicating with the language of faith and love, then we're communicating at so much of a higher level. We're you know, it's like the example of Jesus who taught always in the positive. He was clearly communicating with the language of faith and love. He didn't say, don't do that. He said, you do well to do this. So, you know, I see how language evolves, and it's thrilling to see it. And I also see, you know, I'm a person who's very sensitive to the vibrations of language and the other and the hidden meanings, and perhaps we all are, more than we know. This is something that,
but being,
you know, goes
into
back
poetry,
to what,
that really does change that sensitivity.
It's what Anne said, too. You can communicate with your heart, no matter what comes out of your mouth. And you know, there's a vibration to language that can have an underlying uplifting quality or a put down. And, you know, it comes through. And I think as we communicate more and more on the internet, we really have to hone these skills of positive communication and loving, the language of faith and love, rather than the language of coercion and fear. And, you know, so I can see how, you know, it's going to be thrilling. I'm not a person who learns other languages well. And so that's always kind of terrified me, those teachings from the book. Wow, I'm going to have to learn to speak other languages. You know, buckle down, kid. Now you got to do it,
but,
you know. You're not going to get through if you don't.
Yeah, you're going to have a Marantia mind and Marantia teachers. And we don't know exactly what that means right now, but one of the things we haven't really talked about much, you know, regarding the Marantia life is we can't even imagine the intelligence we're going to be gifted with. You know, the idea of Marantia mind, there's not going to be, you know, Marantia is not for moron, okay? Marantia is about us actually having, you know, a mind that is a soul mind, that whose ability, expansive ability, we can't even begin to realize. And they make a number of points about it. And one is, you know, just some of the descriptions, and maybe again, perhaps in later shows we'll be talking about Gerasim a little bit, but they describe one point where we're on the promenade of the circles of the angels. Now, the circles of the angels, okay, on Gerasim, there are seven circles surrounding, you know, with promenades. They, you imagine big, like, something like Roman aqueducts that are, you know, 1,000 times larger and surrounding these enclosures and so much more architecturally complex and meaningful. But imagine being on this outer one whose circumference, they're saying, is 1.5 times the circumference of the Earth, okay, of our planet. And we're looking down, and so you'll be interested to see down into the first circle or down here or whatever. Well, they're describing looking down at activities literally expanding for thousands of miles. Okay? You know, literally tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of square miles that our vision is covering. And they're describing it as though, oh, you won't be, they didn't say, you'll be straining to see everything. It's too bad you'll be so high up because everything will seem like ants to you. No, they just talk about us as being able to see it entirely. So, you know, it's even though we pick up there where we leave off down here, we pick up with much better equipment, okay? The thing that we don't have as better equipment is our character. That's why what we do here and our choices to do the will of God are so important. That's where we pick up exactly where we leave off down here.
Mm.
And with that greater equipment, if we don't have the character to manage that equipment, to use it for the right purposes, that could get us into a lot of trouble. And they allude to that later in some of the Supreme papers. But, you know, I don't want to digress too far. But just that kind of thing is something to be aware of, is we're going to be able to do so much. So getting back to the point that you were originally making, I would have no worry. The abilities, my terror is staying organized in the physical world. I'm terrible at it. People that know me know I'm terrible at it. But I will have a mind that is a little bit better. It's not just habit, folks. Some of us don't have that gift that some of you just look at things and...
Some of us have the piling gene instead of the filing gene.
Right, exactly.
Piling and filing, I like it.
Right. You know, I have other abilities, but, you know, the point is that in this life where there are geniuses and there are morons, you know, speaking unkindly, you know, people that have lesser intelligence, you know, that kind of differential is gone in the next life. Okay, we start on that kind of an equal plane with each other. What's different in the next life are the characters that are associated with each of those numerantia minds,
right,
and our personalities.
And let me add to this, Paula, and say,
okay,
of all of the people that I know, you are one of the most committed to personal communication, and you utilize language in a very eloquent way. You always have, and that is part of your nature. You just have not been in a situation where you've had to be immersed in another language culture for any long period of time. Had you been, you would have naturally utilized all of your mental power and spiritual power to want to communicate.
Well,
to
I think
people.
You're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely
and
right, and it
urge
occurred to me.
And that to communicate will transcend your apparent difficulty in learning other languages. You probably don't really have a lot of difficulty in learning other languages because you've never really been in a situation where you had to for an extended period of time. And almost everybody who has to does.
You know,
right.
That's true, and I am a communicator, and I love people, and I want to communicate with them, and I want to hear what they have to say. So I think you're right. I would naturally try my utmost to be able to communicate because that's so important, and to be able to understand what they are saying back because that's so important. And you're right. I think immersion experience, everybody I've ever talked to say that's the best way to learn a language. You immerse yourself in a different culture, in a different language, and then, you know, but perforce you have to learn it in order to, you know, survive, in order to get along, and it makes sense. And I, and you know what else occurs to me about learning the universe languages? We wake up over there. We really are starting over as babes, and in a sense, you're right, Andre, we do have an equal playing field with a new mind and much greater senses and better equipment. It's a total upgrade. However, we're still like little babes in that world, and I love to think about, I romance with the universe a lot this way, that they love us so much, and I feel their love for us. And I, you know, when I read the Urantia book, I feel their love for us in spades. To me, it's a gigantic love letter that they sent to us, and they communicate so strongly their love for us in that book that it just touches my heart when I think about it. And I contemplate their love, not only the love of God, but the love of all of his agents, all of our big brothers and sisters in this universe. And I feel it. I feel it so keenly, so, you know, powerfully. And I think, okay, so we're going to wake up over there and we're going to start to try to communicate, and it'll be just like my precious, you know, little children in my life who, as they learn language, they communicate, they do their best to communicate with you, and it just melts your heart, right? You're, because they're trying so hard to get across their point.
And they're so cute.
And they're so cute. And I think of May, you know, when she was little, when she meant to say, I have a great idea, she would say, I de-do. And we figured out what she meant when she said, I de-do, and now it's part of our family culture. So, you know, and I know you guys have all experienced that. I mean, a little brother or sister, you know, gives a nickname to their baby sister, and all of a sudden that's what the family calls that child forever, you know. It becomes a part of the family culture. So it'll be fun to be a part of that again in that level of a child in the universe learning how to communicate with big brothers and sisters in the spiritual sense for the first time.
And on that same note, children learn language. Their minds are designed to learn language. And up until a certain age, the mind is very flexible at learning languages. And a child can learn two or three languages just as easily as they can learn one during a certain age, during a certain time in life. And I had that experience myself where on our move to the U.S., we stopped in Germany to visit relatives. And at that time, most of them didn't speak English or spoke only a nominal amount of English. And so my brother and I both learned German really quickly because we were young enough to just be, you know, language sponges. And because we didn't use it, we lost most of it. I went back to visit them 30 years later, and my language sponge wasn't nearly as functional as it had been as a youth. And I believe that when we wake up in our next phase, we will have minds that are much spongier for language, like they were when we were young here.
That speaks to Andre's point about the better equipment.
And one of the things that they've learned about mind is that it doesn't really solidify in certain ways until we reach certain ages. And then those channels of learning become more rigid in our brain. So I'm betting that one of the upgrades to our equipment will be a much greater language flexibility.
I'm going to stick with your earlier term, a much more spongier mind.
A spongier mind.
I like that one, Crystal. That's good. It's a spongy mind. You heard it here first, folks. So shall we
just
continue on with this?
Absorb.
Yeah. with the Six Mansion Worlds. Andre, do you want to read it?
Sure. Let's do so. By the way, you know, just speaking of language, you know, even though moron, you know, comes from moros, which means foolish or dull in Greek, my good friend Kyriakos Herakleos, who stayed with a Rancho Book Reader from the New York City area, used to say, and he was from the island of Cyprus, he used to say that moro, okay, means baby. And that's probably more likely where that comes from. So this idea that, you know, we have an embryonic soul in this life and we're born into the Marantia life really has merit. And that may be captured partly in the word Marantia. Now, there's some other things that, that other scholars of the Arantia book have said, you know, regarding that. But I think some of the brilliance of the authors of the Arantia book is that they use a lot of double and triple entendre. You know, there are multiple meanings embedded in many of these words. And one is clearly that moro in Marantia certainly relates to baby.
Oh, I love that.
So here
that.
We go. Yeah.
So it'll just be universe baby.
That's right.
Probably
we start
will
out
be
as...
really cute, like little toddlers.
Yeah, and
I think
by the time
we,
by the time we're Marantia adults on Salvington, what do we get to be? We get to be spiritual babies, you know, spirit babies.
Yeah.
And
so we are
start
born
out
again.
There.
Yeah.
Once again.
Yeah.
So the sixth mansion world, section 8. Sojourners on this sphere are permitted to visit transition world number 6, where they learn more about the high spirits of the superuniverse, although they are not able to visualize many of these celestial beings. Here they also receive their first lessons in the prospective spirit career, which so immediately follows graduation from the Marantia training of the local universe. The assistant system sovereign makes frequent visits to this world, and the initial instruction is here begun in the technique of universe administration. The first lessons embracing the affairs of a whole universe are now imparted. This is a brilliant age for ascending mortals, and usually witnesses the perfect fusion of the human mind and the divine adjuster.
Mm.
In potential, this fusion may have occurred previously, but the actual working identity may, many times is not achieved until the time of the sojourn on the fifth mansion world or even the sixth. The union of the evolving immortal soul with the eternal and divine adjuster is signalized by the seraphic summoning of the supervising superangel for resurrected survivors and of the archangel of record for those going to judgment on the third day. And then, in the presence of such a survivor's Marantia associates, these messengers of confirmation speak, "This is a beloved son in whom I am well pleased." This simple ceremony marks the entrance of an ascending mortal upon the eternal career of paradise service. Immediately upon the confirmation of adjuster fusion, the new Marantia being is introduced to his fellows for the first time by his new name and is granted the 40 days of spiritual retirement from all routine activities, wherein to commune with himself and to choose some one of the optional routes to Havona and to select from the differential techniques of paradise attainment. But still are these brilliant beings more or less material. They are far from being true spirits. They are more like supermortals, spiritually speaking, still a little lower than the angels. But they are truly becoming marvelous creatures. During the sojourn on world number 6, the mansion world students achieve a status which is comparable to the exalted development characterizing those evolutionary worlds which have normally progressed beyond the initial stage of light and life. The organization of society on this Mansonia is of a high order. the shadow of the mortal nature grows less and less as these worlds are ascended one by one. You are becoming more and more adorable as you leave behind coarse vestiges of planetary animal origin. Coming up through great tribulation serves to make glorified mortals very kind and understanding, very sympathetic and tolerant.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. There's that word adorable.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like I said, I feel their love. And when they, you know, they're explaining this adventure to us and what's in store.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, it was greatly comforting to know that you don't just die and then there's nothing to do forever. You know?
Right.
That didn't sound like much of an existence, to just sit around doing nothing forever.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened.
Right. It's really hard. I mean, the human imagination really, unless really employed, and even when employed, doesn't reach very far. But let's try to imagine a few things right from the beginning. From world number one on, you are with mortals that come from 618 other worlds, okay? From Mansonia 1 on. Immediately, you are being exposed to one-time human beings that have very different kinds of orientations than your own. That includes, it's going to be different enough just rising up with other Urantians, other people from our planet that are coming from other cultures. Imagine rising up with people from so many different other planetary cultures.
Mm.
You know, that right there is one big departure. That makes the culture that starts to evolve and that we start to experience to be different. Well, then they start to say that on the various worlds, you know, because of, you know, it's enabled certainly by our progression, on those worlds as we progress, society starts to take definite form. Cultured human beings, or, you know, and let's say cultured Marantia beings in this case, that we will be, crave to have order to their society, crave to have things that they can depend on in their culture. And those kinds of things evolve, and we will be making contributions to those cultures in the same way that we currently make, to a greater or lesser extent, contributions to our own culture down here. But even more so as we progress, because as we progress, we're going to be becoming more and more who we are. And many, many people in this life don't ever think beyond just living day by day. Many people in this life never really think of expressing who they truly are creatively or in their work or in their you know, social circumstances, and somehow having that make an impact on their society, or simply don't have that opportunity. In the next lives, as we read last week, as social culture becomes less and less a selfish kind of a thing and more an other-directed kind of an affair, we will be making not only contributions to others, but they'll be making contributions to our lives. So we can't imagine the richness of the culture and how it just keeps increasing in richness.
And especially in an environment that's more controlled, you know, to where to prevent or at least to mitigate misunderstandings and allow
mm-hmm.
for spiritual growth.
You know, I often think about the political climate that we're dealing with in the United States. and what good statesmanship is like, how that would operate if all of the parties involved were truly committed to unified problem solving with respect and real genuine statesmanship.
Love.
As opposed to a real belligerent, partisan political framework where our primary interest is in sabotaging the other team.
Based on distrust, actually.
Based on distrust. And I think about, you know, what facilitates a more belligerent approach. And I think it is primarily a defense mechanism. It's operating out of a defensiveness. And what brings out defense? It's the concept or the idea or the misunderstanding that one is under attack. The belief that one is in danger or is not valued
somehow.
Is threatened. And when you think about just our, again, I bring up our culture, our, you know, like our video games. We, you know, the majority of them are about blowing things up. The majority of our movies and our sci-fi and our concepts of being visited by beings from another planet, our first impulse is to defend ourselves against them by blowing them up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talked earlier about the mark of the beast and being fearful, that's kind of how I imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
And we hardly can imagine what it would be like to live in a world where the initial response to a visitor from another place is welcome, is, you know, laying out the red carpet, you know, putting on a feast, you know, creating a celebration around meeting this visitor. And I think the translation of that belligerent, defensive, threatened concept to this warm, welcoming, loving approach will be dramatically different. It'll be transformative.
You know, it also occurred to me as we were reading, Andres, you were reading that, this idea of the thought adjuster fusing. And I often think of the thought adjuster as that infinite divine germination. You know, we talk about this life being the embryonic soul. So it's like I often think of this life as the germination of the seed, and the thought adjuster, the implantation of that divine spark from the universal father, the father of all things, into the mind of the mortal is not unlike, the pattern for me is not unlike the sperm and the ovum, and what happens as a result of that initial contact, the explosion of new life and of new things. And so the father plants that original spark in the mortal mind, in the child at approximately 5-6, and that germination begins and continues throughout the whole mortal life, on into the next life. And then about this mansion world, we start to see that coming to fruition. And finally, that fulfillment of that process has happened. It's culminated into fusion, where our mind now finally fully accepts, fully takes in all that the Father is offering, all that that germination process is complete. And now we are a full-fledged baby soul, you know?
Well, and we do have the example here of Jesus, who was, for all intents and purposes, fused with this thought adjuster through the entirety of his public life, public speaking life. And he exemplifies for us what a really perfected type of personality, how a perfected type of personality behaves in many different situations. And I think if all we have to work with is just our imagination of what it will be like to become like him, more and more like him as we progress through this Marantia process, that gives us some kind of a symbolism to work with.
I want to be just like him when I grow up.
Yeah, me too.
He's my hero, as he is so many. He is the universal hero of all heroes.
And I love that terminology that they use, that we will become more like super mortals or superhuman.
Yeah.
And that brings up the image of Superman.
Yeah.
Or some of the other sort of comic book heroes we have, these superheroes who have all these expanded physical abilities and whose purpose is to do good, to go about, you know, overcoming evil and doing good.
Right. And all those vestiges of, you know, you can see when they say this brilliant culture is now developing, this amazing spiritual culture on this particular mansion world. You can really see it because those vestiges of animal fear and all of those things are now gone. They're almost all but gone. Be like a world in advancing light and life. And I, you know, what you were saying, Crystal, about video games and stuff, you know, I think I said on one of the previous shows, this obsession we have with darkness and death is just the opposite of what we need to focus on. We need to focus on light and life, not darkness and death. And that's an obsession we would do well to get rid of here on this planet, not wait for the mansion worlds to eliminate them.
Wouldn't
it
be great,
you know,
to have a series of video games where we could build on these concepts of the advancing Marantia phases,
yeah,
you know, where we utilize our imagination to create like a Sim City of these progressive spiritual stages, you know, the progression of goodness and mercy and justice and, you know, loving brotherhood. Wouldn't that be, I mean, to me, that would be really fun.
Well, I might start a whole new concept. And Andre, you said something earlier about you know, waking up with these 600 and what did you, how many worlds did you say? 618 or something? Mortals from different worlds?
Well,
Andre,
we know that there are 619 other inhabited worlds in Satania, so.
Yeah. But it also occurred
being,
to me.
Our being one of them, there would be 618 others.
Right. It occurred to me that some of those worlds, at least some of them, probably are already settled in light and life, and so some of those citizens of those worlds would get to bypass Mansonia, perhaps, which would be, you know,
yeah,
that'd be interesting.
I agree.
Then they don't, it's not like they don't, you know, they get to bypass the mansion worlds, but they also have to go back to material worlds if they didn't have that experience that it describes as being, you know, that those adversities coming up through that adversity. Suppose you were born on a world already settled in light and life, and you didn't get to experience that adversity that that most mortals experience. Mortals like us, we experience probably more adversity than many. And it says that it makes us, how did it say, it makes us kind and loving and
more
and
understanding more, and more kind.
Sympathetic and tolerant, right.
Sympathetic.
And,
I mean, how wonderful.
Yeah. And so, it, you know, the book says that if you didn't get to experience that on an, on in the evolutionary sense, then you were born on a world settled in light and life. You got to bypass the mansion world. You will still come back to serve material worlds that are going through that so that you will get that experience. I think that's an interesting point. But, Andre, are you still with us? Andre may have had to leave for a moment.
No,
I don't.
Andre is with you. Yeah, I'm sorry. I muted the phone that so that I wouldn't be making extra noise or something when you guys were talking. But
you wandered off the vacuum.
Yeah, well, yeah. I was actually commenting and wondering how come you're not hearing me.
I've done that.
So yeah. So. Well, I know there are a number of things that this brings up for me, and you know, in the last 8 minutes that we have in the program, let me just mention a couple of things that we should realize here by now on the sixth mansion world, and one is that, you know, if all the way along they're trying to give us a sense of this upstep in culture, does it not occur to us as readers that we ought to be trying to acquire a lot of these qualities?
Andre, are you there?
We lost you again, Andre.
Yep, you dropped off.
Well, that's too bad. What he was starting to say sounded really interesting.
Well,
I'm imagining that what he was going to say was that shouldn't we be trying to live as if we were progressing through those same mansion worlds now while we're here?
Right. And the I think I mentioned last week that the Planetary Mortal Epics, that's paper 52 of the Urantia book, really gives us a good sense of what that means. And it correlates with these different mansion world experiences as well, because in the Planetary Mortal Epics it talks about the evolution of a normal world from the stages of primitive life to light and life, and it really shows you those different progressions and different steps of evolution to higher civilization, and I think the Mansion World papers does that too. So it's a very nice corollary. Those two papers, the Planetary
Mortal
Epics.
I would
like
to suggest that we do a show on that paper in the very near future.
Yeah, that would be a great one, because that one is amazing, really. It really talks about that evolution of mortal life.
And we have had an offer from Frank Kaufman to come back on the show with us in the near future. I wanted to wait until I knew how long it would take us to get through the Life After Death series,
mm-hmm.
and have him come on and talk about some of the really practical work he's doing in trying to teach world peace.
And Andre's
interreligion.
Oh, go ahead. Andre's back on. And did we cover kind of what you were going that we should?
Well, not exactly. You know, I mean, okay. part of what I'd like to just, you know, get across here is we don't get to fusion except by wanting to get there. We don't get there except by wanting to be in the presence of God. We don't get there except by wanting to be able to not so much hear but follow the leading of our thought adjuster. And what we ought to be getting from these teachings about the mansion worlds is that the more we can transport, what is a world settled in light and life? A world settled in light and life is a world that has piece by piece been appropriating the higher culture of the mansion worlds and Mirantia spheres in the mortal sphere that is the inhabited world. That inhabited world is deciding to become more and more heavenly. And so to the extent that each of us is trying to do that here on Earth, and to the extent that we're doing it both in the outer life, in service, and in the inner life, by being as Jesus was, and we were speaking of the Master as that wonderful example and inspiration for us, what did he do? What was the signal thing that contributed to that life of service and that loving character that he had? And we're told the single most important piece of it was unbroken communion with the Father.
Mm-hmm.
What he did was he maintained contact with our Father. And that doesn't mean conscious contact, because as a kid, he was just the same as we are. He didn't hear the Father's voice speaking to him. But what he did do is he had faith that the Father was there, and that when he was speaking to the Father, that the Father heard him. And gradually, ever so gradually, felt more and more the leading of the Father, and was willing to follow what he thought in his mind were right precepts, things that God would want him to do. Well, that's available to all of us to be able to do. We all do it imperfectly. We all do it, you know, not the way Jesus did. And some of us have taken, you know, severe left turns, you know. But we can always get back to that. And if we're to have the better world that we can envision, then that means one person at a time, we must be striving for more and more communion with our Father, spending time with our Father, and then more and more time with each other in loving fellowship and service.
Beautiful.
There's also the process of traversing the psychic circle and wondering what, how, when, you know, why we can begin that process or facilitate that process as soon as possible.
Right. It's also about having that goal in mind and keeping that goal, holding that goal. You know, the Urantia books reiterate so many times, it's not so important what you are as what you are becoming. Day by day. The best way to become a frog is to live loyally every day as a tadpole, you know, and it's in that living loyally every day. And the other thing about, you know, your unbroken communion, Andre, that occurs to me is in this age when we are literally barraged with outside information coming in from everywhere, literally everywhere, it's important that we're able to go into that inner place, that place of peace, and be in communion with the source of all peace and the source of wisdom and understanding, and to be able to come to peace with the information that we're constantly hearing and to be able to sort it all out. We simply have to digest with the inner self, with the Father in heaven in the inner life. Makes communing with him even more important, I think.
Keep in mind that the purpose of all this education is the development of a majestic personality.
Yes.
Yes.
And with that, we're down to the end of the show, and it looks like we're going to be able to finish this paper next week. So we'll go on to, what, the 6th, 7th Mansion World, and they give us a digest on those. And then we'll move on. Maybe Ken Kaufman will be able to come on after that, Crystalline, and we can talk about what else we're going to do. But what a great paper this has been, and I hope it's been as meaningful to our listeners as it has been to me. I'm loving studying this. Thanks go out to Dr. Scotty and to Anne Anna, for calling in. Really appreciated your calls. It's been great. Thank you, friends. Do you want a last word, you guys?
Well, we hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our life after death discovery. And until then, bye for now.
Join us all next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.